Hi everyone, this is Julie Harrelson, and we're going to go ahead and get launched. Just to make sure that you're on the correct flight. This is Health Information Technology Oversight Council Accreditation Subcommittee webinar meeting, and we are scheduled to meet from now until 3:30. And if we finish early, we can, but we won't be finishing any later than that. What I'd like to do is have everybody, let's go around our large room here and. We can have everybody give their name. And let's start with those of you that are on the phone.
Yes, Dr. Advantage Dental. Dave Witter, Witter and Associates.
Van Dyke, ODS.
Okay. DJ Kavner, Cascade AIDS Project. And I'm on the co-chair of the Legal and Policy Work Group.
Chris Coughlin, Harrelson Group.
Paul Matthews, Ocean.
Karine Tebow, High Talk Staff.
Paula Jopper, Staff of High Talk.
Minnie Montgomery, Consultant of High Talk Staff.
Tom Wunderlich, High Talk Staff.
John Hall, Consultant for the Project.
Carol Robinson, State Coordinator of Health IT.
So welcome everybody, and thanks for taking the time to do this. We've got a pretty content-rich presentation for you. I want to go now to our agenda, just run that down for you, and then talk about the outcomes a little bit, and then we'll launch into the content of the program today. So want to just spend a few minutes talking about our outcomes and set you up for some success and thinking while we're going through the content. And then we want to have some discussion and feedback on the draft proposal. And the way that we'd like to frame that up is to have you be thinking as we go through this process, what works, what doesn't work or could be improved, and are there any outstanding questions that need to be answered in order to basically create a strong accreditation program. Hi, who just joined us?
Hi, it's David Greenberg. Sorry I'm late.
Hi, David. Thanks for joining. We've just gone around and done a round of introductions, and I'm working our way through the agenda and the outcomes. And then at about 3 o'clock, we'll clarify and confirm your suggestions and revisions and make a plan for next steps and then close. Does anybody have any questions about the agenda today? Okay. So we'll go to meeting outcomes. There's three key things that we want to increase everyone's understanding of. One is the components of a draft proposal for the accountability and oversight system for HIE in Oregon. And then talk about how the accreditation program fits into the larger system and around specific elements of framework, purpose, and goals of the accreditation program. And then we want your feedback and suggested revisions. And a big part of this is that there are no major mature accreditation programs that exist, and so we have to start with our thoughts and research. And so part of what I'll be doing as we go through the slides is I'll be your slide narrator, and then I'll provide some points along the way for our experts who have actually been doing the research to put this together to comment or provide any additional dimensions to the presentation thus far. So what I suggest to you, because we're going to go through all the content before there's really a chance for much conversation, is as we're going through each one of these elements in terms of the components of the draft proposal, how it fits into the larger system, and the framework, purpose, and goals, you could be thinking about those three key areas, and as we go through the say, if you begin to have this sense like, man, that's not going to work, or oh, I wonder if we answered this question, would we be able to make it better? Maybe make a note to yourself, and then we'll come back and we'll have the latter half of the meeting be discussion. So let's take a look at the core components of the accountability and oversight system. There are basically three key components. One is standards and requirements, which, as you know, includes HIPAA, ENAC, and state-specific requirements. And then there's a monitoring component of this accountability and oversight system. And this would include methods for ensuring compliance with standards and requirements, It can include attestation, contractual agreements, audit, accreditation, ombudsman's office, and state oversight regulation, or any mix of these. And HITOC will develop and implement a monitoring program which will include an HIE accreditation program. The third component of this is enforcement. Hi, who just joined us?
Hi, this is Christina Grijalva from Behavioral Health.
Hi, Christina. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
We just kind of gone through the outcomes, and we're going to go through some of the core content of this, and as we're going through it, if you could be thinking about what about this proposal or proposed framework works and what could be improved and what questions we might need to answer in order to actually develop a fully baked proposal, that would be great.
Okay.
So on component three, enforcement, there needs to be methods for addressing noncompliance and using existing mechanisms, HIPAA and state law, and potentially additional mechanisms such as penalties, revocation of accreditation, required breach notification to the state, breach and remediation policies for consumers. So I just pause here and ask any of our subject matter experts if there's anything you'd like to add to that overview or at all.
I think this looks great, Julie. Thank you for leading us through this conversation. And I did want to just offer that as this is a relatively small group, that if there are questions throughout, that those on the phone shouldn't be afraid to help us pause and help us get those addressed during the presentation.
Sounds good. Are there any questions at this point?
No.
Okay, very good. So the draft, let's go into the draft proposal for accountability and oversight. And this contemplates a tiered approach. So all participants in HIE, what it contemplates is that all participants in HIE, regardless of size and function, are going to be subject to a review or assessment process and will have the need to supply certain information for review by the state/SDE. And this information will vary based on what tier the participant falls in. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Participants would have to go through this review process as part of pre-qualification for the provider directory registration process and to receive a state-issued digital certificate to participate in the HIE. So let's put a little bit more dimension on that tiered approach. And there's really four key pillars to this. Accreditation is the most rigorous and requires ENAC or other type of national or industry accreditation in addition to any Oregon-specific criteria. So there'd be an audit by third party with the third party with the review by the state SDE. And examples that might fall in that HIO, are we calling that HISP or HISP?
Most in the direct project call them HISP.
Okay, HISP, major health system or health plan. Compliance is voluntary, ENAC is applicable, and audit by third party is lighter weight than accreditation. And the examples of entities under that tier would be large unaffiliated physician practices or clinics or single hospital systems. And then registration is a process of self-attestation of best practices for information security and HIPAA and other compliance mechanisms and regular audit. And the examples under that would be a small physician practice. And then the fourth or lightest version is the process of self-attestation of best practices for information security and HIPAA. Entity examples would be single physician practice, physical therapist, dentist, etc.
So one question.
This is Pat.
Yes, Pat.
Van Dyke. And why wouldn't why are the dentists called out separately? Because we have some large dental clinics. I would see the dentists falling into the same as the physicians.
We do have many single
dental practices, just as you had to do single physician practices, but we also have large dental clinics. And as time goes on, within the next 2 years, we will see diagnosis codes associated with service codes in the dental industry. So the level of their information is going to become increasingly a part of my total health.
That makes sense. Kent, do you have other input on that? Do you agree?
I totally agree. I don't want to see the dentist get off the hook. What's the thought process even behind having so many levels of tiers? What are we trying to accomplish with the tiers?
I think we'll address that in the presentation, and I described it earlier today as somewhat of a, you know, there's a horizontal aspect of accreditation in terms of the criteria and standards that are in place, and there's somewhat of a vertical aspect of it as well that would address the basic rules of the world for individual providers up to very large health information organizations. And so we've tried to tailor the development of this straw model with both of those concepts in mind.
Well, then I guess I'd like to table this question until we come back to this, but I would like to see us address this before we close out.
Okay.
This is David. I had the same question about the number of tiers and even the titles of the tiers in terms of what we were trying to accomplish.
Well, and that's good feedback. We'll definitely want to get to that.
So do we want to change the way that we're doing this? I actually just have to take these questions as they come up and take these questions we need to answer. Or do we want to go through the whole thing first?
It would be helpful to go through it first. Okay.
Yeah, I just sat through a 3.5-hour presentation where the first 2.5 hours were questions, and then we got into the presentation, and all the questions were answered.
That's what I was thinking about. I always like to poll the group, but that would be my thought as well.
Yeah.
So, okay, so when we look at this tiered approach, if we go forward a couple slides. Yeah, there we go. So the results of the approval, which in this proposal, is that upon approval, the entity is listed in the appropriate provider directory. That entity purchased an X.509 digital certificate. They may already have this, and if they do, they proceed to step three. The state SDE signs the certificate, and the entity can now participate in statewide HIE. So they go through their process to get accredited, and then these are the steps to get things to go live. And then the frequency of review or renewal, again, what's being proposed is on a regular and scheduled basis, and entities approved accredited status would be up for review. This review process may be anything from another self-attestation to a full audit. Okay? So we were able to identify 8 key decision points that form the framework. A self-assessment process, which we discussed with the HIO panel. Definition of entities that require accreditation. Definition of transaction type that requires accreditation. The accreditation process, state support, ENAC standards, state-specific standards, and enforcement. So those would be basically our decision point anchors for this program. So if we put a little detail behind each of those, and I'll run through this, and again, any of our subject matter experts that want to provide more dimension, please chime in. But number one is the self-assessment process. So what we're thinking is 2 to 3 HIOs will perform self-assessments using ENAC criteria in 2011. And if we to provide the definition of entities that require accreditation, all HIOs, HIPs, community health, data network partnerships, and other groups that promote data sharing, including the management of security and transport for directed exchange across multiple and independent stakeholders, whether using one platform, multiple platforms, or a vendor solution, for example, Epic, Care Everywhere. So that's the definition for it. And then there's a definition of transaction type, which is that it must align with meaningful use requirements, start with clinical transactions for stage one, and extend to administrative transactions with stage two. So if we look at the high-level steps for the accreditation process itself, after an organization has conducted their self-assessment, documentation will be submitted to the state. The accreditation staff will then review it, flag any areas of concern, and return those. The organization would be given some period of time to respond, for example, 30 days, and provide additional information. And then at the end of that time, a public hearing would be held where the material would be reviewed and discussed with the goal of rectifying any issues. So what kind of support would the state provide? For smaller organizations and nonprofits with demonstrated need, could be provided the technical assistance by the accreditation program staff to help them through that process, try and get as much accreditation as possible across the board. And when we look at the area of ENAC standards, Oregon would use ENAC standards as a baseline, and if the organization is already ENAC accredited, the state would recognize that accreditation, and the Oregon HIE accreditation program will review any Oregon-specific standards and hold a public hearing. And if it's not, then the organization would need to go through a complete self-assessment review and public hearing process as was outlined. So what would we do then on a state-specific basis? The things that we think should be considered and potentially include are reporting requirements around financial sustainability, including a rate plan, specifying fee structures, public health and quality improvements, reporting to meet Oregon's health reform goals, and connecting to end-to-end phase-in over time. These are some examples of potential areas of state-specific standards. And then finally, saving the best for last, enforcement. Possible enforcement mechanisms could include suspension or revocation of accredited status and or digital certificate. Possible financial penalties for a violation of statute or rule related to HIE services. And requirements that HIOs report breach to the state, perhaps whenever the media and Federal Department of Health and Human Services are notified of their HIPAA. So those are the eight key areas. Anybody have a comment or question for clarification around that?
On the ENAC one, what level of ENAC? I know there's the mandatory stuff and then there's the not mandatory stuff. Are we looking at just the mandatory sets on the ENAC or the full standard?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question because there is a complete separation of those. If the state wants to take portions of the non-mandatory requirements and make those state requirements, I can see that as a benefit to be able to keep a framework going without too much additional work. But for me, I would say the mandatory are the requirements.
So is that the consensus that we're looking at the mandatory set only, or I guess I'm trying to find what the scope of that one is.
I think that's basically to be determined.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your feedback is important at this point to help move that conversation at the when the accreditation subcommittee and the HIO executive panel met together. The idea was that folks would review that and kind of get feedback. And I think that's part of what we're doing this week and next week is getting that feedback on. We said
you know,
the baseline, but what does that really mean? So
I think the question is, for me, I would say you need to look at this as, and this is just having gone through some unwrapping processes recently, when you're looking at doing the accreditation process, start with the baseline that needs to be, and almost like meaningful use, start ramping up the needs to a final time, that says this is the, you can be accredited at the mandatory level. So is accreditation the goal? Or are we saying accreditation is the starting point and these additional non-mandatory requirements will be imposed over year two, year three? So that's the accreditation process is about a year-long process.
Right.
And actually, I just met with, for the last five days in a row, we've been meeting nonstop with large clearinghouse organizations, and their accreditation under ENAC for the health, I can't remember which one it is, HHANP or whatever it is, accreditation. Those are every 2 years they're becoming reaccredited, and it takes them each almost 2 years to go through the process
for
their first time. They're
cycle.
Constantly in that cycle.
Yeah.
And Paul,
yeah.
Is the process to get through this 2 years because they're having trouble meeting the standard, or is it just the process itself takes 2 years to get through?
I think it's because when the standard first came out and people started reading the standard, to get all of the information in place, documented, and all of their processes aligned so they could deliver the package for the accrediting committee to read it and understand that everybody knows where it is, that you've trained your internal staff, where all those processes are. It takes at least a year to get through the training process in-house on a large organization, and then you have to go through the actual steps of accrediting, getting the audit done. Any material that's missed, you have to resubmit, you have to go through the process again. So it's important to give enough timeline to say, we recognize that we cannot delay HIE, but the goal would be is that you must meet a minimum standard, and is that going to be the ENAC accreditation, or is that going to be HIPAA? And then the accreditation is the goal in year, starting year two, and then the mandatory requirements, and then the non-mandatory requirements by year three, that might give you a stepping stone to accelerate this improvement. I just don't know. I mean, I'm having difficulty even making sure I have every piece of documentation just from our base review, and I was astounded at some points in the lack of documentation for some of those non-mandatory needs that we've got. Where is it? Who has it? Who's the owner? Who's updating it annually? It's a lot of work to go through that process, and so that's why
I completely agree with you, Paul. It's the mandatory standard itself isn't a very high hurdle to clear.
See, right, the mandatory is not.
Just to document everything out and get it done could be a hurdle, and I'd hate to see, us delaying the state's HIT here, waiting for everybody to get these hurdles cleared and all this done. I think your suggestion of about a phased approach is very well thought out.
We've been suggesting that, in terms of this, and wondering if that. So that's great feedback, and so there may need to be a process that we put into place of within this team or another, subgroup of or a survey of some kind that would maybe prioritize the non-mandatory elements, and in terms of how you might phase them in.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of groups will get a long way into this reasonably quickly because they're really just the documentation requirements for HIPAA and for other processes. But the level of detail for audit is unknown because nobody's gone through the audit requirements for that process yet.
Well, Paul, do you have an idea of is anybody in Oregon actually certified or at this level yet?
Not that I know of.
No.
I don't know anybody. There's nobody nationally.
One.
UHIN. Okay.
Our Health Information Network I think I read, Green, do you that another? I think I read
I think
that
some others might have submitted applications.
Exactly.
But they haven't been approved yet.
I guess I would ask the question of is those HIOs or those organizations that started brand new in the last 6 months or 12 months, it's a lot simpler for them to get to the accreditation point as part of their process of building an infrastructure than it is for an organization to turn 180 degrees and make sure they've captured all that information. And the only thing is the risk on that. So.
So it's, so some of this is around what is the priority, and then how basically sequence the activities in order to get the maximum amount of accredited parties possible without increasing the load so much that it just doesn't get done in a timely manner.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested in some of the other large groups in their, on the call on what their reading of the ENAC mandatory requirements are and how they feel that they would do it, because I know I'm struggling a little bit with some of it.
Is there anyone on the phone that would like to comment on that? So if we go back and we just sort of look at this through the tiered approach description, and we talk about the four areas of accreditation, compliance, registration, and waiver, are there comments about those key areas that would be helpful in terms of making putting some more more flesh on the bones in this proposal?
So I think that maybe before we take those suggestions or comments, it might be helpful. John, you might want to jump in and start to address this first. What we were thinking in terms of you know, the need for a registration process. Maybe our names are not, all where they should be at this point in time, and that's something that it would be easy to adapt immediately. But just kind of walk everyone through how we developed the tiers and what our thinking behind that.
Right. Thanks, Carol. So if you ignore for the moment the names around the tiers and the number of tiers that actually exist, what really lies behind this at its foundation is a recognition that there are a number of different types of entities that would be engaged in HIE. And if you look at when we talk about an accountability mechanism, you're really talking about a set of controls, some reactive, some proactive, to try to minimize risk, is what it comes down to. And organizations or entities of different sizes, with different scopes, if you will, have different risks. And there are different impacts associated with a particular organization should a breach or should some risk materialize. And so the tiering is one way that we try to acknowledge that and apply appropriate mechanisms to organizations with certain scopes, certain reaches, certain risk levels associated with them. Ranging from what's called in this slide waiver, which is mostly self-attestation, which you can think of, the mechanisms around this are mostly reactive, all the way to accreditation on the far end, where the mechanisms are mostly proactive in terms of requiring audits and accreditation. So, it sounds like there might be some questions about the number of tiers, the naming of those tiers, but I think something that would be good to know is if everyone, agrees and we have consensus that there are different levels of risks associated with different entities and that there are different accountability measures that are appropriate for those different ranges of organizations. And then maybe it's a matter of deciding, do we agree on a four-tier system? Do we think it's more three tiers, two tiers, and what the naming is around that?
So this is David. Where I was coming from in terms of the number of tiers and the naming was thinking that even the title waiver is a little confusing. It applies that somehow you're not responsible. You have had some privilege waived and that you don't have to comply.
Yeah.
And I was leaning more towards thinking about three tiers where the minimum requirement would be registration. Mm-hmm. And the primary difference here in the description of the requirements is around the auditing. And I'm also confused by the notion of auditing, because even for the small single physician practices, wouldn't we want some routine either renewal of registration or self-attestation that is periodic and not just on the front end once?
Yeah.
And so perhaps we could address the distinction between tier 3 and 4 by calling it all registration, but by having different requirements around the auditing and the self-reporting of continuing compliance.
Well, that's great feedback, David.
Yeah, I think the other question I would have is I know that in the registration side, the registration requirements, say, can't be public health departments. Would there be a difference in the public health departments grouped together in organizations? So say there's a Southern Ireland group that group multiples together, there's a larger one ourselves who group multiples together. Do they need to do duplicate registration, or is the fact that they've become a registered at a higher level basically waive their need to go through the process whatsoever?
Yeah, we were talking about that this morning some, and wondering that, and John, again, this goes back to your thinking. So if there's a registration process, so if we develop a master provider registry that has a field or something essentially within it, and tell me if I'm not clear on this, but it has a field that would, so you start dumping in provider demographics and entities into your registry. Some of those are registered for Health Information Exchange, and some are not. And so there's a field. It's like you basically flip a switch when those are registered. So for an HIO that also has its own set of providers within that, do they have to register individually through the state registration site, or can you do that for all of them? And that goes back to entities. And how then do we flip that switch on the individual provider within the individual level provider registry?
Can I ask a basic question that kind of compounds yours there a little bit, Carol?
Yeah.
And that is this going to be the entity level registration or the individual level registration that's going to have to attain this accountability?
Well, so that's why we came up with this tier, because we didn't feel like it was that you have to ensure some level of trust throughout the individual participants within HIE.
Right, and I think if you look at even with this four-tier approach, even down at the so-called waiver level with a single position practice, and it may be a single position, but there's still an entity that single position is associated with. That's a practice.
But so I see this accreditation being an entity level function.
That's right.
Because a provider may work in multiple places, multiple practices, using different systems. These standards are very much system facility related standards. They're not things that would follow the person from place to place.
Right, and when you look at the registration of entities, there's normally the association of gateways with those entities. So you might accredit, because you won't be able to do HIE unless you associate your address on the internet. And at the entity level, I mean, so when I look at things like the NHIN service registry, the UDI directory there, the Care Everywhere system one, the way they work is you register your gateway as an agency and you create alias affiliations of all the organizations and their alias names in that directory below there. So it's not just the legal entity name that's associated with the gateway. So I'll give you, for instance, on ours, when I look at the listing in Care Everywhere, I have OCHIN as the registered entry with the gateway address. Below there, I have each of the legal entity names registered. And then below each of those, they may have their individual facilities registered with up to five aliases. So a Westside clinic that's also providing HIV services might be known as HIV Westside, Multnomah County Westside Clinic, Westside Multnomah, so that the patient has a chance when they're in front of somebody to say, I've seen at this organization, this is how I know the name. There's a certain amount of certainty that they'll be able to find that information. And so I agree. I think that the question is that when we look at accreditation, you're actually accrediting an organization that's going to communicate, and that is the gateway itself. And to get into direct true tuition certificate, it's going to have a gateway. Then you step into the provider level. And we are right. Providers go between organizations. And I see providers being associated with multiple entities. A perfect one would be the coalition of clinics in Portland, where all of the providers are part-time providers. They're volunteers. So they have I don't think they have a single full-time provider on staff. They basically are rotating through here and there, and which clinic they're serving at is based on their schedule. And so they may have a single gateway for all of those clinics to be affiliated through. But they are registered with, they might work with their hospital, they might work somewhere else. So I think we need to sort of really tie down to what does the accreditation mean? Is it the accreditation of an agency providing a gateway? Or is it the accreditation of each entity by name that's part of that entity, part of that gateway service organization? So I'm fine with being accredited as an organization. I just need to know how I explain that then down through the tree of who pays for what. If it's one gateway, we may lose certain things. And they have their own HIPAA requirements that they have to meet. The other piece I would probably say is that when does accreditation within a state trump the non-accreditation requirement at the national level? Yeah. Because right now there's no accreditation requirements at the federal level to share information and across state lines. And would you require accreditation of anybody talking to state HRIOs or state gateways to do that work? It becomes sort of a where do we draw the lines? I know we have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to bring up the conversation.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that it's a good point. It's been something I've been wrestling with, frankly, and I don't really have a good answer for it yet. I don't know that a lot of folks have a good answer for it. The Direct mm-hmm. Project, for instance, knows that within a HISP, a health information service provider, there's this concept potentially that HISP issuing a certificate, for instance, or signing certificates, and through signing, it indicates to other parties that that particular party, there's a trust arrangement, which means you're following certain policies. But what does that mean when you have an organization in one HISP trying to talk to an organization in another HISP? If they're, each HISP is issuing different certificates, has different meanings in terms of the policies behind the different signatures.
Yeah.
How do you communicate that cross trust between HISPs? Do the HISPs merely cross-sign their master certificates, so to speak? Or does every entity that's communicating with a HISP have to go out and get their certificate re-signed with any HISP that they want to communicate with? That's not a pretty process if it's the latter, and I think everyone's hoping to avoid the latter. But what that means for us, somewhere there is a line. I think we've just got to kind of figure out what that is. Is it only, if somebody's talking to an Oregon institution from Washington State, does it just matter that the SDE has a cross-signature with the Washington SDE, or does there have to be some kind of further reach through? I don't know. I think that's a conversation we still have to have and figure out.
So what you're describing really means that we have to develop a process which is iterative, that we're not going to get it perfect the first time. It's going to have to respond to the changes. And I suspect that the people who create the earlier standards are going to be the ones guiding the folks who create standards later, right? So from the perspective of the provider, we need an accreditation process which gets renewed periodically as the standards are changed and updated and keeps everyone in the pipeline with the most recent information moving forward.
Yeah, and I think the other question I would have is from a technical level, the process of registration is I've signed the legal documents, I've agreed to certain processes, I've submitted the correct information and forms, and I'm therefore registered initially with a certificate. And I think that having some form of staging that says stage one, in this time frame, you can be on-ramped, you can go through this process, you've tested out how your communication works, that you've met the standards, that you are exchanging information with the right protocols. Stage two, you can basically go past that production. Now there's a scale. You might say an individual provider clinic has less risk. What is the risk level? And I'm not sure, what's the state risk level right now for patients, for future patient information? Is it California, is it one patient? Is it 500 patients? Is it a, you know, so at what scale is your volume of patient identifiers become the issue versus the numbers of physicians? Because clinics could go up and down rapidly, one provider one day, five providers the next. Lose a payer, suddenly go back into one provider, they sell their practice. You could be accrediting people every single week and reaccrediting them on a basis. So I'm concerned about just the ongoing maintenance of that and saying maybe it's you register, you sign up, you're able to provide services, and then a certain tier, be that volume of visits, volume of sub-organizations, you reach a next level of accreditation requirement. And what is that? Because everybody has to meet the HIPAA. And so, you know, you must be audited somehow. Maybe it's a financial audit process. You've gone through your annual financial audit. They've done a look at your best practices. That's your first level. Maybe the second one is that you've successfully had an external HIPAA audit come in and said that you've met the requirements for HIPAA and that you've not got any glaring red flags against you on HIPAA requirements. What that level of detail would look like, and then do we look at what are the transaction sets? So we need to look at, because that doesn't even get into that on the next side, but you can look at your transaction sets, your protocols, the standards of communication.
Right. So. You know, I think that that's one of the areas we contemplated Oregon having additional requirements, just because ENAC doesn't touch that aspect of communication.
Does anybody on the phone have any comments or questions?
No. Thank you.
No.
Okay. So on, we're sort of covering this in a variety of different angles. Is there any more input regarding the tiered approach? Questions specifically in terms of what works well in this, what could be potentially changed or improved, and what outstanding questions we might have that we need to answer about it.
Well, I'd like to go back to the dentist thing, and I don't want to see that. I don't think we should call out one particular specialty or one group of entities or, you know, providers in by name. I think the tier should be more organized on a role or size level and kept rather generic.
Yeah, this is Pat, and I would agree with that. I'm still concerned about the four tiers as well, and it sounds like we're still going to have more discussion on about that. But I'm concerned about calling out specialties.
Okay.
Should we just refer to everyone as a provider?
Yeah, healthcare provider.
This is Christina. I like the idea of a three-tiered approach as opposed to a four-tier. I don't like the term waiver. I would think that the process of self-attestation should be something that recurs on a regular basis. And then perhaps the compliance would be voluntary compliance as opposed to just compliance, because every entity and every provider will have to be in compliance in order to participate. But perhaps the term we might consider is voluntary compliance as opposed to just compliance.
Thank you. Does anybody have any response to that? Suggestion?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the options to look at is you could have an accreditation process with three levels within there. John, I threw it blank. The three levels of security communication level of the federal level, or the FIPS,
yes.
Levels of standards.
Yeah.
You have FIPS 140 level 1 through 3. Actually, 1 through 3. And level 1 is basically that you are operating under certain guidance and structures, you have security in place. Level 3 is you've gone all the way up to having the magnetic field strips on every device. It's only opened in a clean room environment. It goes way beyond. It sounds like we could have accreditation at levels, and that way then everybody is accredited, but they're accredited based on a certain level until they move in, and they can say I'm accredited at level 3 if they meet certain requirements, or they can say I'm accredited at level 1. And you can basically then put mandatory requirements on each group that says scale and size denotes you must be at a certain level.
Yeah.
Right. Very much like controls can be set up by, expected controls can be set up by small, medium, and large organizations.
Well, and doesn't that follow a lot of the philosophy that's behind HIPAA, not saying directly what people do, but to be reasonable, I can't remember the exact terminology, but my understanding is that essentially because of this issue, because you can't expect a single provider office, the level of risk and what they need could be able to be put in place is the same as an integrated delivery network and what they need to have.
It does. I think the question is that we need to make certain that we don't dilute the requirements for accreditation at a certain level by trying to make sure the smaller entity is in that process somehow.
Yes.
There's going to be a vast level of difference between the financial aspects. And do I have the same finances behind my organization from a financial process that somebody like Kaiser has? No. And so the question would be is that would the same level of accreditation apply? From a technical level, I think it should. From a financial level, I know that I'm going to have conversations that say no. So I just want to make certain that when we look at security or look at these accreditation levels, that it allows you to participate in HIE, but it also doesn't mean that you have to be so... that you have to set up a professional billing cost agency that charges for almost every transaction to make it sustainable.
I think you're right on the money, Paul, and we have the other side to consider as well, is that if there's 10,000 people in Oregon that have to go through the process, we've got to fast track some of them because it's going to be a huge amount of administrative work to manage all this and a cost on the state or the state designated entity or whoever's going to be responsible for this.
Right.
So breaking them out into tiers allows us to move some of them through the system quicker, and it'll kind of a different level.
Yeah, that makes some sense in terms of making sure that there isn't so much barrier to entry and making it impossible to be sustainable. Anything else? So when we talk about the tiered approach, is there anything else that you think could be improved about this, or anything that you think is very strong inside this? Okay, so
this is Christina. I had a concern as I read through this about enforcement of financial penalties or punitive measures. Were there any discussions about how that might occur? I mean, have there been any concepts developed around enforcement of penalties?
Well, we did have some discussion about the idea that if there was a circumstance where an HIO, a large system, or an accredited organization was non-compliant, how we could structure this so that providers within that organization would not be penalized in terms of information sharing. Yeah, John, do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, Christina, I mean, in this particular instance, it doesn't involve necessarily a financial punitive measure, but, you know, Paul, this will kind of harken back to some conversation we've had in the technology work group where if there were an organization deemed not following the rules of the road, there are certain mechanisms you can do, such as removing them from the directory. If the certificate were issued by the state, you could revoke the certificate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's maybe even other measures, such as if an HIO were to become insolvent, you know, you might even be able to take the gateway information within the directory and point it at a new HIO that was willing to take over routing of some of that information for some of the providers. So there's various technology mechanisms that we could employ should an entity go insolvent or not follow the rules of the road.
Okay.
I think that, and then on the other side of that, in terms of punitive or penalty, you know, the legal and policy work group, but as you know, is going to kind of be wrestling with the high-tech HIPAA enforcement penalties, and when you look at Oregon's standards, whether that those are adequate or whether there ought to be either policies or perhaps only recommendations that would be available to the Attorney General in terms of action, of when to get involved in a breach, something along those lines. And of course, this is all new, so you know, I understand those are scary words, but on the other hand, I think that we absolutely need to have, you know, the ability to create confidence. And so, how do you balance that? I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and just as far as timing, as Carol mentioned, as you know, even the initial conversation in the legal and policy work group was kind of under the direction to let the revisions to HIPAA have some time to play out nationally and see what happens. But we just wanted to make sure that was called out in this draft proposal as a place that something additional could be included, since the legal and policy work group on December 15th will be talking about some of this issue.
So I want to go now. We've gone through some elements or some considerations in these eight key decision points, but I want to just walk through these and see if anybody has any additional thoughts. So if we go to the draft proposal with the key decision points, there were eight. And so what this is proposing in terms of developing the program is to actually, under number one, that two or three HIOs will perform self-assessments using ENAC criteria in 2011. Any thoughts about that particular approach?
No, so I think from my standpoint, you're still going to be doing in 2011 HIE.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so having in the year, being able to say that there will be a self-assessment process, an evaluation of the criteria, would be very much in line with the idea of staging the accreditation need over time,
mm-hmm.
to give people time to get to that self, pass the self-assessment and actually go through the process.
Okay.
And I think that's a really wise way to move forward. But I also want to make certain, you know that I'm also talking from an individual need, and I want to make certain that we follow whatever the state strength describes on that. So if other people believe that the accreditation should happen up front, we need to do that.
Yeah, that's a tough question, and something that we've, you know, struggled with a little bit, because, you know, you're again trying to balance confidence in a new tech system, a new paradigm for providers, and at the same time encouraging BJ, robust use of of HIE, but while still you want that confidence on one side, and you also want the flexibility to not stymie or slow down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Participation, right?
Yeah, if the measures of an audit, or the measure of an audit criteria or accreditation requirement are so punitive in the way that they manage the process, you could actually end up with no HIE functionality at all.
Right.
I think that the ENAC standard goes a long way to setting an end goal. But also, I mean, like I said, you know, the last 5 days, one of the groups that had accreditation when we responded to our RFP came back in and said, we just lost our accreditation. And they were immediately, okay, what other standards are you certified and accredited in that we may use and accept as a standard moving forward? And for us, it was more of a, I understand your accreditation, I've got trust, you're following best procedures, now you've lost it. Why did you lose it? Was it that you never sent the certification in, you never paid for the audit, you've got financial issues, or you failed it because of large breach in part of the requirement?
Right.
And so it does give trust that you've gone through some third-party review.
Yeah.
And I think really we need to look at is, I would hate to dilute the need, but I also want to make sure we move forward with HIE. So I think that giving the 2011 for people to be able to go through that process, test it, see what it looks like, see how they go, makes a lot of sense.
Any other thoughts on that from folks on the phone? So what about the definitions that we've crafted here? Does that seem clear?
So we don't like the names.
Right.
Use generic provider.
Use generic provider, yeah.
And I also heard some issues around it's really entity, make sure that you're talking about entity.
I think individual entity and individual, because you may have an individual using an indirect that has no EHR, and they're still going to be exchanging health information through the direct project.
So it should be registered.
Yeah, I think it's a registered, it needs to be somebody that's registered, and does the registration, and then they go to a technical need, does the registration require you to submit a certificate that you will be using so that at least we know what it is, what the standard is, and what the encryption needs.
Right.
Because if Verizon gives away 23 million certificates, I'm sure they're meeting the technology requirements, but what does that mean from a registration with the state of Oregon? You know, do they need to hand over a copy of their public certificates? We could try to get that part of the certificate.
That's your first test.
Yeah, first test of security. Hand over the keys to the house.
What about the definition of transaction type, which right now is in line with meaningful use requirements, start with clinical transactions for stage one and extend to administrative transactions in stage two?
Define the level of clinical transaction, first question. Is it laboratory? Is it exchange of direct interface requirements? So if I have an interface, say, between clinic A doing ADT interface with a hospital to update their laboratory system when I send orders in, does that require linking to the accreditation need? Because you'd end up with, right now, you also don't want to have mandatory requirements lined up in a 12-month period that require wholesale replacement of the existing exchange to take place. You could really run roughshod for me over, you know, will the labs comply? Will the, because if we say, you know, you're going to be accredited in this transaction, this means you must do this. So, you know, that goes to the entity list more to me. First, what are the entities, what are the transaction sets we're specifying? And at what point do we say the transaction is a CCD? Is it a CCD exchange? It is entity continuity of care. So year two, we're going to include ANSI 5010 requirement. Year three, we're going to include you know, laboratory exchange information. Year four, because that goes to the dental side of the house as well. If we're going to be doing dental coding, exchanging medication lists with dental practices, you know, and I'm not a standards expert when it comes to every one of those standards. So,
yet.
And when we, do you think that the process that, as it's been contemplated here,
there are kind of four key steps, but of course you need more detail. But in terms of doing self-assessment and then having a review and giving time to respond to anything that's not there or clarify, and then having a public hearing, does that sound workable?
And when we talk about the tiers, then that's for the kind of the largest entity, right? We're not talking about every smaller sized office
having to do
entities have a public hearing. That's a question.
Well, I guess the main question would be is I don't understand the need for the public hearing. That's the first one I'm trying to understand. Is the public hearing that because they didn't pass accreditation, they lost it, or they had a breach? Or is the public hearing, I have sent in information that shows that I've accredited through ENAC, I have met the standards and specifications, I've unwrapped successfully on the technology side, I meet all of your requirements. What is the public hearing? And I don't know, understand that language, so maybe somebody can help me with that one.
Well, I think the public hearing is partially on that, how do you balance that building trust, because if it's a public meeting, notification goes out, there's an opportunity. And again, if we're talking about something at the HIO, at the largest level, or larger size entities, are we trying to build confidence with consumers? So we need to review what has been submitted, and then to have an opportunity for the public to comment, essentially. I mean, this is the model that we've built. They're having a public hearing on their accreditation.
It seems like you'd have, I have the same question about the public hearing. This is Pat. And I understand, and I think it's really important to bring the public in on this. But having that at the end of something seems to be backward. Why wouldn't we put the public hearing at the beginning of it?
So have the public hearing as part of setting the standard for accreditation levels.
Yes, exactly.
And then have the accreditation stand by itself as part of the process.
Yes.
This is BJ. I agree.
So then you wouldn't have. So for example, like with the health plans and setting rates, right? There's a time for public comment period. And so if that's, I mean, that's not exactly analogous, but somewhat. I mean, I think that's what the thought was, that there'd be a point in time where there'd be during the accreditation itself, not setting what the standards are, but as an entity is going through that accreditation process, there'd be an opportunity for interested parties to make comments. So we can say that that's not right. I mean, Oliver.
This is Oliver. I just don't understand what would be done with that public comment. I mean, if you have the accreditation process and you have the standards and they're going through this process, What role does the public have in terms of providing the feedback that actually would change whether or not they're accredited? I mean, is it like a checkpoint? I just understand how that feedback is employed in terms of moving through that accreditation process for the larger entities. And I don't know how Minnesota is doing that at this point.
Are they using it as part of public review on annual audit of the SEC? It says you are following the procedures, you are requiring accreditation of certain agencies, you have set up the registry, the policy, the procedures, and the legal entities to do this. So are they using it there, or are they using it as part of the every agency that registers that becomes accredited and needs to go through a public hearing process?
Maybe instead of a hearing, maybe it's a public posting of some kind. I mean, it's like
there you go. That's question such.
So that there is the availability for public review, and you know, certainly like within other kinds of great changes, there need to be announcements and publicly posted or advertising taken out in certain kinds of medium. And
I think that the idea about putting the public comment up front on the input of the standard is excellent. I would suggest we consider something like what the insurance industry is doing to police itself with the complaint processes and stuff. Because really what the public needs to input in the ongoing phase is if there's a problem or an issue that needs to be dealt with. And we should have somewhere for that kind of comment to come back into the system and say, okay, my HIO or my records were lost by my HIO or corrupted or they're disclosing information when they shouldn't be or something like that. And then that needs to come back into the policing process on this whole accreditation.
And that, I mean, one of the things that was on one of the monitoring is this idea of should there be an ombudsman office somewhere within the system. The legal and policy workers had a brief conversation about that, but didn't really come to any conclusion. It's a cost in, within the whole system, and how do you balance that dynamic? Christina, were you the person that was talking about the Office of Civil Rights at the last meeting?
Yes, uh-huh. And I had proposed a patient advocate for the HIE, someone who would work with patients who might need to file a complaint or, you know, have a concern about the exchange process.
This is BJ. I think that to echo the role of a patient advocate or and public input is going to be critical, not only in buy-in, but just there's some of the things that we're wondering how to deal with that the public may be able to provide us with answers to the interstate accreditation thing. For patients who get care in other states, for border states, they may have some valuable input.
So part of this is we may not be able to decide today exactly where these things go in the process, but there may be multiple entry points for some sort of public process that's going to make the whole program work better.
Yes, the time sense.
So this is Pat. Let's say ODS goes through the accreditation program. We do our self-assessment, and it's submitted, and the state says, 1, 2, and 3 are okay. 4A is fine, but 4B has an issue and you need to come back to us. Will that information all be available to the public to view?
Well, in ENAC, and I believe this is what Minnesota is doing, is allowing entities to indicate what they don't believe should be released. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that being part of Minnesota.
Okay.
No, in terms, because I mean the public hearing in Minnesota was to gather that information and make it available to the public and air concerns to the public. But I don't know if this organization has any say in which, if any, of that information shouldn't be made public.
Because my suggestion was going to be, or another suggestion around the accreditation processes, I think that it's important that the public understands that those things are going on. And if those materials are available to them to look at, I think it, to the extent that they are, I think that the consumer needs to be aware of where to go find those things. But I still think that to have the comment at the public hearing at the end of the day on that just seems misplaced to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
That's great feedback, Pat.
There's head nodding going on around the table.
Now, I would ask one question. So we set an accreditation level, a requirement. We've gone through the public hearings. Everything is approved. What is the frequency that the accreditation can be modified, the requirements, and what is the process? Would there need to be a process for new public review, new requirements under the ombudsman? And that's where the ombudsman committee requirement comes in, other community HIE programs or these better community programs. And just have to do a review period on it. There's a how frequently will new requirements come out that need to be certified by through public comment? Because while we set standards in this arena, without a doubt, it's going to change rapidly, and we need to make certain that we are broad enough under the needs to allow it to spawn new capabilities without tethering it.
I'm going to move this forward a little bit. So I want to make sure we get through all of some of it. Again, we've talked about didn't have it up earlier, but there, so this also contemplates that there'll be some technical assistance for smaller organizations and nonprofits. Does that make sense to everyone?
So I'm trying to think of when the right time to ask this question is. Maybe it falls in this category about the overall cost of doing this.
Yeah.
And are there cost constraints for the entire process? Are there going to be, is there an assumption that all organizations will bear the individual costs of going through this process?
Dave Witter?
I was thinking about just saying yes.
Okay, then we can move on.
I mean, there. I think from the what we're thinking about in the finance work group we'll need to consider how we might subsidize or support this on the front end. But in the long term, this is going to have to be self-sustaining. So that's part of the reason as well for thinking about that graduated level is that by having the graduated levels of accreditation or accountability, that then you can kind of structure the level of effort against the level of risk and cost. Maybe the better answer is, yes, we're all thinking about how we're going to finance this and what the burden is both on providers and what it's going to take in terms of resources to mount the overall accreditation monitoring effort.
All right, so it's under consideration, but in terms of anything more specific than that, it's hard to answer at this point, it sounds like. David, did you have any other questions or thoughts about that?
Well, I was wondering if maybe at the very front of the description of this process there needs to be some statement about trying to be aware of controlling costs.
Because
we may not be able to afford, ultimately, you know, the model that we would like to adopt, but we ought to, as there is in the entire HITOC process right up front, an acknowledgement that one of the goals is to control costs. Perhaps there should be some statement to that effect in this process.
Yeah,
because the worst thing we could do is create a process that actually increases the cost of healthcare.
Exactly. Which there are many places, I suppose, where that.
Yeah. And I guess there's one number five there, which is a non-profit. Can I demonstrate the need to get state funded here?
I think we'll have to just go through a development of need-based assessment.
Okay, so on 6, we've talked quite a bit about ENAC, so could we advance to 7 state-specific standards in terms of reporting requirements around financial sustainability, rate plans, public health quality improvement, and connecting to NPIN? How does that sound as starters?
I have a question. So if your rate plan is 0, as long as you say your rate plan is 0, just don't charge for HIV services. So the rate plan would, to me, say that I'm charging, because if I'm going back to the original criteria, the size and type of organization, if I was an IPA that is providing community services for HIV amongst its own community, and they don't charge for the HIV function, they charge a fee service within their ICA to use the system.
Mm-hmm.
So they disclose their fee to membership before they disclose the transaction fee for HIE services.
Is it more important here to worry about the financial stability than it is the model of sustainability?
Yeah.
As in, what's my bottom line look like right now, not how I plan on make money?
So it could be just a financial disclosure as opposed to, it could be a financial disclosure or a D&B report.
Okay, so something that it's important to have something that demonstrates financial stability or sustainability. But the question is, how much detail or what kind of detail might need to be made available in order to do that? That's a fair way of characterizing it.
Well, at first, we're all going to have to base this on a theoretical model because we're not doing it.
Yeah.
But once we get going, we should be able to prove that we're financially sustainable in some way. We should be able to, not how I do it should be evaluated, or how I'm charging or what I'm not charging. We shouldn't worry about that. We should be looking at, is the company got a healthy bottom line? Is the organization making the money, or are they about to fold up and flip away into the night?
Well, I had a question in terms of rates, though, or fees, or membership, or dues, or subscriptions, or, you know, assessments, or whatever you want to call them. How do you, is there any reason why we would be concerned that it would cost, double the amount to participate in a local HIO in one part of the state over another?
I mean, that's really good. That is the underlying question. My standpoint, if I had to disclose, because I don't charge for HIE services, if I had to disclose a fee structure based on membership fees that we charge, I've lost my ability to negotiate fees with anybody outside of what was published in public. If an organization is a professional fee organization and somebody comes to them with a volume, you've lost the ability to negotiate a percentage of fee. That says I can give you a 10% discount, but I'm not going to give you a 20% discount. That basically says that all the commercial vendors also will need to disclose their fee service. I think the real answer is, are you solvent? Do you show solvency year over year? And it's more important to know that they're a solvent-based organization.
Well, that's interesting, because I guess I would go to my next question that pops in my head is, I'm picturing a discussion that happened a few weeks ago. So are we going to strongly encourage that providers join their local HIO organizations? Are we going to, be neutral on that? Are we going to, the whole idea of whether the state competes or, state capital or small s with SDE competes with local HIOs, will then go to the question of how much you force any provider or try to strongly encourage any provider to go with any particular HIO system. And if we don't know what those rates are, and if there's no standardization on those rates, how unfair could that end up being for providers who, are bringing the phone to the state at some point and saying, you want me to join this one, but that's going to cost me four times, what it would if I did this other solution. And quite frankly, I don't want to do, I don't even like them. So what do you do? Where does this leave us?
No, I completely understand the argument. I do. I'm just trying to work out, if I put on a hat for the commercial entity, I've lost all power of negotiations with a commercial entity. If I do it for my organizational size, we're trying to sell a service. The fact that our fees are included in the cost of other needs outside of HIE means that we'll be disclosing all fees necessary to become part of that service.
So I guess to me, it's part of the question really lies you pick a federated approach and you try to create enough regulations within the market, not too many, and then you can't have it both ways. You can't have us, say we want a federated approach with market-driven approach, but we want you to tell all providers that they have to join our network within our community. Because to me, that's like asking for both sides of the coin.
Oh no, I don't think people should be led towards a specific HIO organization. My personal response, I don't think we should be led towards a personal, even though healthcare is supposed to be community-based, HIE services are not. They are a suite of services that enable you to do things. And the question is that what is the level of integration that would be lost?
Right.
you know, the reason that the design for NHIM works is it leaves the HIO membership and organization to the local HIO and who they can get to work within that community. But it doesn't stop another organization from sharing information with them at a certain level.
Yeah.
The value proposition then comes down to is, yes, we may charge you more because we have a lower transactional volume, but this is your additional benefits in the community.
Yeah.
That I see as a value add. I see the risk, which I agree with you on. The risk is if you need somebody to say, hey, I want you to participate in your local regional HIO,
right,
that you're actually setting up a standard that says the state is saying healthcare is local and you have no, you're going to have to go with your local group. I don't think that's a fair way to do business in any organization.
Yeah.
I certainly would support somebody that says, I'm going to force you to go to this community HIO. Having been in a couple of community discussions about HIOs recently, I know the providers don't want to go with their local HIOs.
Yeah.
They just won't do it.
Yeah.
So I'm just aware of our time here. We've got about 5 minutes left. So I want to take any very quick staccato comments about enforcement. And then we'll talk a little bit about the next steps for this. Anything about enforcement that we haven't already covered in terms of concerns or ideas?
Let me ask a question. Is the state designated entity going to be the home of the ombudsman committee, or would this be a state, if it's a contracted SDE, be a state delivered requirements and where would that exist? Because that does go to cost. Who's providing the support for the meetings, the frameworks, attendance meetings, necessary communications costs, which drives up the SDE cost. Was it a volunteer on the committee where all costs, only expenses are covered, we need to go through that.
Would it be a function under HITOC?
Yeah, would it be a function under HITOC that says that state-designated entity is a home that has communication hit it, but the Ombudsman Committee requirements or the governance structure really falls under HITOC as a coordination effort so that we're not necessarily penalizing one jurisdiction.
Right.
I like the idea of having state, if this is a state state health HIT organization, this is really about making the state an act HIE requirement. I like the idea of state control for that stuff. Because you don't want necessarily everybody going, you don't have this person to live under the entire market.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure
enough. That's good feedback.
Anything from anybody on the phone before we go to the next step?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Okay, so we'll go to next steps, and basically staff is going to go away and take your feedback and do a little processing and submit the revised proposal to the HIO Executive Panel for a similar kind of review. And then the Legal and Policy Work Group will continue to discuss monitoring and enforcement mechanisms at their December 13th meeting. The Consumer Advisory Panel will provide feedback on the preliminary recommendations from Legal and Policy Work Group around monitoring and enforcement on January 5th. And then a final recommendation will go to HITOC on the 20th for the retreat. So that's where we're headed with this. And there's quite a few interesting things I think that will be happening at that January 20th HITOC retreat, this being one of them. And I think that what we'll be doing then again is taking the notes away and putting those together and taking this proposal to the next level. Are there any other comments, Carol, that you have before we close for today?
I guess this is the beginning, just the very beginning of this discussion. And so, typically I have my best ideas when I'm either out jogging with my dog or taking a shower, because it's the only time that I'm not getting, additional feedback or stimulus through multiple media channels. So if you have other thoughts when you're walking your dog, you know, or taking a bubble bath, then you should you should quickly take a little tape on, you know, make a tape of that. Yeah. I'm actually just seeing Paul up to his neck with Calgon bubbles.
Thank you.
But you should definitely try to capture those and get those back to us, because I think that there'd be probably a lot of other things that continue to occur to us. So we're going to be seeking not only your good thinking, but others as well in terms of this. So,
right. So
can we have the next draft of this circulated for review and comment?
We can. Yeah, we can send that to you at the same time that we send it to for the next iteration. Will go to the HIO executive panel webinar. We will not want to have comments kind of coming back in between those two things. I don't think we'll have time to really process that much. So I think if we came out with another draft and then we had a chance to. But do you have an idea, Chris?
I think people could either participate in the webinar on the 9th, we can get that information to you, or if you had any comments that you could get to us prior to the meeting, then we could make sure that those were shared as part of the conversation.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
But I agree with Carol. I don't think there's time for us to get the draft done, get it out to you, get comments back, and do another draft before the 9th.
So I'd just like to thank everyone for their participation on Friday afternoon, and hope that you all have a lot of can put a lot of creative thinking on this. I know a lot of us are involved around this table and on the phone are involved in